Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hello, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is wonderful.
I'm going to bring a lot of intensity this episode.
Ooh, that'll just be fun.
Mostly to you with the way I'm looking at you. Just like, can you describe it? It's very intense and very fierce. And
yeah, cool. A lot of eye contact.
I'm not going to look away from you this entire episode.
That's going to be difficult.
I do have to refer to my notes, I'm going to kind of just like hold it up in front of your face, but I'll always at least have one eye in my periphery, okay?
Okay, I'm not going to do that.
I need you to do that. I can't just give out that energy and you not give it back.
Yeah. That's,
babe. Yeah. How am I supposed to perform like
it's
this?
It's just my computer. I don't want to have to lift
it. You just looked away from me. I win. We were actually having a secret staring contest. This is a show where we talk about things that are good and things that we are very into. And it's maybe a bit of a challenge considering everything, but we're still happy to be here talking
plugging
to
along,
each other,
you know,
plugging along
on that enthusiasm train,
doing our best. Hey, there's a poster with our faces on it.
Yeah, it is incredible. I never thought I'd be on a poster, but here I am on a poster.
It was designed by Beck Hurley. You can get it at our store. If you go to macroy.family, you'll find a link. But yeah, if you like stuff like that, that's where we are. We look cute as hell.
And we really
it's on
do.
A poster. You got any small ones?
I was just trying to think about that.
You're going to ask me to go first, aren't you?
I'm trying not to. Oh, what about, can I say, have I said copper mugs? A little copper mug?
I think we've talked about specialty drinking cups before. I think you've done a segment.
Oh my god!
But no, yeah, no. It's don't get discouraged. If you wanna, if you do want to talk about that, then you talk about that.
You know, I will share this anecdote. So we purchased two copper mugs, exactly two, for the purpose of drinking one drink, which is the Moscow Mule, and we were doing it on a Zoom call. And one of our friends thought we were so fancy, and I was so charmed by that.
Yeah, they thought the cocktail itself was fancy, and I wanted to be like, it's vodka and ginger beer, and maybe sometimes lemon juice. It's like not fancy.
She told the story that there was a bar she went to in college that required you to turn in your ID if you were to drink out of a copper mug because they had so much theft.
Oh, God, yeah, I don't blame. I'm going to say the Leatherman Multi-Tool. I'm almost certain we talked about the Leatherman Multi-Tool before, but we have two of these now in our house because I think I got one as a present from your parents.
Yes.
Because we lost the other one, but then we found the other one. So now we got an upstairs one. It just lives on my desk now, and I use it all the time. And the one downstairs, like, I use it all the time. It is so nice to not have to, like, run to the toolbox anytime I need, something to pry something or a knife or
Griffin
pliers
does a lot
or whatever.
Of prying. He doesn't talk
I do.
About it.
That's me.
Typically, there's something in something, and he wants to pry it open.
I always need to get it out of there, don't I? Mm-hmm. Those two things are attached. No thanks. Pry, 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 pry. Hey, I go first this week, I believe.
I think that's right.
My first thing this week is one of those segments that I do sometimes where I try to justify a recent irresponsible purchase to my wife, Rachel, because today I want to talk about 3D printing.
Oh, should we have a song for
irresponsible purchase? You're feeling kind of down. You got a little bit of expendable income. You may as well use it to make yourself happy for a moment because it does not last. Just gonna tide you over till the next thing that pulls you out of a depressive episode.
Yay.
Irresponsible purchase.
I love this.
So I bought a 3D printer. And I think 3D printer is cool. Except
can I say that we don't even have it in our house yet?
Gets here today. Very excited. I think 3D printing, the concept of it, the tech evolution of it is very cool, except when people use it to make illegal guns. That part's not great, obviously. But putting that aside, 3D printing is pretty cool. I think probably both of us were informed and myself sold on its capabilities on the Joko cruise, which we've gone on a couple times now, where a person or group of persons, I'm not entirely sure who is the responsible party, hid little 3D printed low poly Pokemon all over the ship so that people could do like a real life Pokemon hunt.
I feel like that is what is responsible for Henry being interested in Pokemon.
I think so too, yes.
He's finding those little creatures.
It was also responsible for us not losing our minds at sea, because Henry would get so bored and we would just wander around the ship trying to find little Pokemon toys for him, and he went wild for it.
The ship was not designed for children, and as such, like the gift shop.
Well, not 2-year-old children. They have like facilities and stuff.
But like the gift shop, for example, did not have a lot of toys, which concerned us. And then we found these little guys.
Found these little Pokemon. It was so delightful, and they were really cool. And then I learned, like, hey, you can just like frickin' make these. You know what I mean? So I'm excited to get a 3D printer for a few reasons, but also because like it'll be neat to just make little figurines for them. A lot of people use them to make like minis for tabletop role-playing game things, which is a cool concept. Not that we, you know, have a tabletop game here in town that we're playing.
I have yet to figure out how this is going to be useful to me. And I feel
and
like
I know that's so important. Anytime I buy something for myself,
I feel like that's going to be important. Right. How do I benefit from this? And I haven't figured it out yet.
Right. It's like when you buy like a Lush bath bomb set or something like that. I'm like, what do I get out of this? Uh-huh. And you have to be like, well, my skin, it gets softer and smells better. And that's, you have to be around me.
Maybe you can make me some beads that I could string.
I love that.
In a jewel.
Rachel loves a bead. I can make you a new toe ring. What do you think about that? You want a new toe ring? I can make you a new, very stylish, cool toe ring. I can put whatever the hell you want on there. That's 3D printing, baby.
I made the mistake of bringing this up the other day that I wore a toe ring all the way until 2011.
Yep. That's very soon. That's not that long ago.
And now you all know it, too.
Now you know it as well. I think 3D printing is like one of the more futuristic things to happen in my lifetime. There's this book that I like from Neal Stephenson, who's a sci-fi author, called The Diamond Age. And it's like this futuristic book that isn't necessarily about this, but it informs like a lot of the story, is that there are just publicly available matter compilers just all over the place hooked up to this infrastructure system like water or electricity called the feed, where just like anything you want, you go and just print it off in one of these compilers. And I thought that was such like a cool concept in the book, but now like you can kind of do that a little bit at home. I am excited, obviously, to have it to make dumb stuff like little toys and things for Henry and other things that, you know, I just kind of want to goof around with. I've been getting into sort of like electronics modding stuff that started with like tweaking around with Switch controllers and things like that. And having a 3D printer opens up a lot of doors for that, whether it's like making parts or components like drill guides to help you like actually do a good job with the things that you're making. But also there's like this annoying faction of things that if you lose them, you're just kind of up shit creek. And like the thing I'm thinking of specifically is like the back battery cover on a remote control. If you lose that, it's like, well, that's it. But now like you have a way of kind of like, if you can find the design for it, obviously like printing it off and replacing it. The idea of having that sort of means of production sort of available in your house, it's just like a really, really neat concept to me. I don't know how actually like applicable it will be, but like having this other thing that, you know, if you need a document printed, you have a printer for that. If you need pasta extruded, you use a pasta extruder. That's a terrible example. But like there are things that just like if you lose them or they break, you have to go out and buy them. But sometimes they're not available because they're very niche. And having something that can make things in the house that you otherwise couldn't get is like a, I don't know, I think is very, very, very cool. And how like readily accessible, this 3D printer was not a very expensive purchase. Like in the grand scheme of things, they make very, very inexpensive models. I think it was like $170 or something like that, which like, compared to a few years ago, is very, very cheap for one of these.
Yeah.
And you just run a little line of filament into it, which is like not that expensive either. And you can just start making stuff at home. And I think that's very cool. This technology sort of came about in the early 80s, although as time has gone on, it's become more sort of sophisticated and easier to put in your own house. And most of the time, printers use a thing called fused deposition modeling, where it just like sort of gooshes out little bits of filament, hot filament at a time.
Yeah, I feel like
rings,
I've seen videos of that.
Watching a 3D printer work in like time lapse is very cool. Apparently the prints take very long, so I'm not going to be like cranking out a lot of material every given day. And I think where my interest also spiked was right around when coronavirus stuff was first hitting. There were stories about this pair of Italian printers who were making these valves that were necessary for a certain type of breathing machine that was like in limited supply. Like these valves were in limited supply and they were necessary for this machine to work. And so they just started printing off these valves so that people could use the machine without burning through this expensive sort of limited resource. And that story got a bit blown out of proportion and has been sort of like corrected a bit, because there were stories of like the company who made that machine wanting to sue these guys and that the valves cost $10,000 a pop, which like that stuff wasn't necessarily true. But I like the idea of like these two have lives attributed to them that they saved because they were able to provide these little tiny plastic things that were essentially a bottleneck to people surviving COVID. And like the idea of having that sort of power in your hands is like super, super cool to me.
Yeah, no, that is cool.
I also know that people have used it to sort of make mask hooks that you can kind of put on the back of your head. So people who are working in like the medical field who need who are wearing masks all day, like it can get pretty uncomfortable around your ears if you're wearing them for hours and hours and hours at a time. So it's super easy to print out these little hooks that you just put on the back of your head and they hook on there instead. Yeah, I think just conceptually having a way to make something that is not like before this, like I couldn't make little plastic things, like whatever it was. And there's lots of things in our house that are little plastic things that break all the time. Like having the ability to sort of recreate that is very, very cool to me. Yeah. Is it an irresponsible purchase still? Yes. Have I justified it? No.
This has been Irresponsible Purchase.
This is my poetry corner. I mean, I could also do a whole irresponsible purchase segment on the many tools that I have purchased to work on my electronics game. I bought a Dremel. Very excited to fuck around with that.
I appreciate that so far your irresponsible purchases have been relatively small, so they do not take up a lot of space, which is nice.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to buy like a rock climbing wall or anything like that.
Although
we do have a... Hold on. Hey, what's your first thing?
My first thing.
Yes?
Is the singular laugh of Griffin McElroy.
Aw, babe. Babe.
I'm talking about like the real laugh.
The real shit.
One where you back away from the microphone.
When did you write this? Because we played some Jackbox games with our friends last night. And
it was yesterday while you were recording Besties. Oh, you were really busting up.
I was ripping. Yeah. we recorded two episodes of Besties back to back yesterday. And one of them is a very special episode where we decide a winner of the upcoming console wars. And I was I was just busting.
I heard, so Henry was downstairs and he was being kind of grumpy and I could hear him from upstairs. And then I heard him say like, my daddy's laughing. That's my daddy laughing.
That's so good.
And it seemed like it snapped him out of his...
That's so pure.
Yeah.
I thought you may have written it last night, because also on this, we have a weekly Zoom call with our friends that is like the highlight of my week, and we've been doing it for like 2 months now, and it's like incredibly important to me. But also one of our friends cut his own hair. And it looks good on the front, but the back looks like on Jackass, they used to do like this series of pranks where they would just go up to somebody and just shear off hair off the back of their head, and it looks like that. And I just fucking went into the ground.
It was darling, because his wife was like, oh, I wasn't going to say anything, and we just fully put him
just
on blast.
Just fully ripped. Oh, shit. Okay, sorry. Yes, my laugh is...
This is one of those things about Griffin that I think took a while for me to get used to.
One of those things. One of those many, many things.
He has a very... I mean, you all know it. He has a very loud, distinct laugh. And it is unlike any laugh I have heard before. And I think at first I was a little, whoa, this is unique about him. And
I know that like I am unable to control my laughing when it hits like a fever pitch, but I never knew it was like particularly like unique in how...
Oh, people talk about it.
Oh, really?
People talk about it. Occasionally, like I will get tweets about the show that will reference how much people have enjoyed your raucous laughter.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. It is an endearing and beautiful quality about you.
Do you have any peer-reviewed research about my powerful laughter? Or?
Well, no, I did some research on laughter in general. Oh, okay. What interested me specifically was that like distinct laugh, like the fact that some people have a very like identifiable laugh. Like the person that came up a lot was like Seth Rogen, for example.
Yeah, his is not even necessarily loud. His is more just like
it's just like constant.
Yeah.
Well, and what I found that I really enjoyed. So there is a whole study of laughter, and it is called gelotology.
Gelotology?
It's spelled gelotology. I actually looked up Google, like. The thing where it'll tell you how to pronounce something. Yeah. It is. It's pronounced gelotology.
I like that a lot, babe. I know. Really good.
And the thing that I was really excited about was a TED Talk I found by Sophie Scott. And she talks about a lot of things associated with laughter. One thing she does like a whole diagram of the ribs and shows like how they like contract when you laugh and how many muscles you actually use throughout your body, which if anybody has ever been injured in the torso area, you really realize how many muscles you use when you laugh because it is excruciating.
Yeah.
People that have like injured a rib, for example, talk a lot about that. But she also talks about, just the, people originally thought that human beings were the only ones that laughed, but actually rats and primates, most mammals laugh.
Yeah, the primates doesn't, I feel like primates.
Well, so they talk about, so if you tickle chimps or gorillas, they laugh in kind of a panting way, which they think is kind of like the origin of laughter. Like as we have evolved, it has like taken a more...
I was thinking
human
more
quality.
Dunstan checks in, Dunstan pulls a prank on Jason Alexander and like... Like does the laugh.
That they call it like a panting sound.
Yeah. Monkey Trouble, you know, is another monkey-based movie.
Okay.
What are some more of your favorite ones?
I mean, there's the episode of Quantum Leap where Sam leaps into a chimp.
Holy shit, babe. What hasn't that gentleman jumped into?
So here's the thing that she talks about that I found particularly interesting that speaks a lot to the different types of laughter that people have. There's two types of laughter. There's what they call kind of social, what she calls posed laughter, which is what you do kind of when you're interacting with people that is a way of like connecting and bonding. And sometimes you're doing it to kind of support your friend.
For their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting. Uh-huh.
And then there is what they call helpless or involuntary laughter, which is like the loud signature Griffin McElroy cackle.
Yeah.
Is when something like really tickles you and you just can't control yourself.
You know what's funny is I that makes so much sense to me. And like as you were explaining it, I was like, yep, okay, that all clocks. And then I was thinking like, I don't think I've done the first laughter on one of our podcasts that I do with the fam in many, many, many years.
Yeah, you just stopped.
I feel like I
only
do this. Yes.
They say that when you are with another person, you are 30 times more likely to laugh. So like if you're watching something by yourself, you know, you're less likely to laugh out loud.
That, yeah, absolutely.
But they talk about a lot of the social capital of laughing and how it is a way of like showing community when you laugh. So they said that helpless laughter is longer, louder, and higher pitched. A lot of times you can tell, like they've done a lot of experiments where people can tell right away if somebody is doing the social laughter or the helpless laughter, like you can hear it in your head. This is another thing like your brother Justin, for example, like the wheezing, like that's when you know you are hearing helpless laughter. They also say that as far as that recognition, it gets clearer as you get older. Like, for example, you can fake laugh with a kid and they will not be able to tell you are fake laughing.
Right.
But they said this awareness really peaks in your 30s, actually.
Wow.
The people have more of awareness of like posed versus involuntary laughter, and that gets more and more distinct the older you get.
Huh.
So yeah, I would recommend if you're interested, it's Sophie Scott. It's a TED Talk. She plays a lot of laughs that they have collected throughout their research, which are incredible. Mm. And she also kind of quizzes the audience to see if they can tell the difference. And everybody immediately gets it right. It's a really cool TED Talk. I would recommend it.
Just to cap this off, I thought I would like show everybody like kind of what that laugh that I do that you love so much that you think is so cute.
Oh, yeah, please.
It's hold on, I gotta tickle myself.
Please. Griffin, that laugh is just for me. That laugh is just for me. Please stop. Griffin, there are other people in our house right now.
It's like that.
Yeah, that's the one.
Can I steal you away?
Hey, we have some personal messages, Griffin.
Cool, cool, cool.
This first one is from Matt. It is from Taylor. To my dearest Matt, you are truly the most wonderful thing to happen to me on my 30-ish years on this weird spinning void rock. I love you, heart, body, and soul. You make me believe in the future, and I cannot wait to spend the rest of my days with you. You are mine, and I am yours. Love, your adorable space ace.
That's very sweet, and I sympathize with the 30-ish years, because I forget how old I am all the time, too. You know what I mean? I think right now it's 32 or 33. It's around there. I shouldn't say that out loud. There's lots of people on the internet who I don't really understand who want to know all my stats.
Uh-huh.
My stats and statistics.
What's weird is height. A lot of people
Everyone wants to know my fucking height.
If you look online, like, Griffin's height is listed, and it is accurate.
And everyone wants to know my shoe size. Here's another one. This one is for Charlie, and it's from Jane, who says, while we are apart, I wanted to send a message to light up your little eggy head. You are the funniest and smartest hedgehog a duck could ask for, and I am constantly thankful for your care and your kindness and hope to continue to share love and fox pics with you. Continue being Bobo Bebo. Continue being Bobo Bebo. Continue being Bobo Bebo. Don't hoard all those fox pics, buh. Don't fucking bogart those fox pics, buh.
What's a
good fox pic?
Yeah.
Oh man, those faces, the little triangular
faces, hands.
The little freaking hands with the toe beans, baby.
All right.
Hi, I'm James, host of Minority Corner, which is a
podcast that's all about intersectionality. It's hosted by James with a guest host every week.
Discussing all sorts of wonderful issues, nerdy and political.
Pop culture.
Black, queer, feminism.
Race, sexuality.
News.
You're going to learn your history, their self-empowerment, and it's told by what feels like your best friend.
Why should someone listen to Minority Corner?
Why not?
Oh my God, free stuff.
There's not free stuff.
The listeners of Minority Corner will enjoy some necessary LOLs, but mainly a look at what's happening in our world through a colorful lens.
People will get the perspective of marginalized communities.
I feel heard. I feel seen.
Like you said, you need to understand how to be more proactive in your community, and this is a great way to get started.
Join us every Friday on Max Fun or wherever you get your podcast.
Minority Corner.
Because together we're the majority.
Can I hear your next thing?
My next thing probably will also not come as a surprise to Rachel. It is a television program that we've been watching a lot of, and then I can't stop thinking about. It is Taskmaster, a British comedy show that so many people have recommended to me over the past year or so.
Yeah, and it is something that I had never heard of until very recently, and now it seems like everybody is talking about it, and I completely...
And we slept on it so hard.
Completely understand why.
And I feel bad for how much we have slept on it, because it is like, again, it has just consumed my every thought. It's all I want to do is watch it. And great news, it's like all on YouTube right now.
Yeah, multiple seasons.
Full episodes, all on YouTube. It's official channel, not like pirated shit. Like the real, real uncut stuff. I am going to try and describe Taskmaster, but I think one of the reasons why it didn't really land for me, like one of the reasons why I didn't immediately seek it out when my friends were telling me about it, is that I think it's kind of difficult to describe in a way that makes it sound as funny as it actually is.
Yeah, and it varies so much episode to episode because the tasks are always changing.
Right. So the basic premise, each episode, there are five comedians, the same five comedians throughout like a 6 to 10 episode series, compete in a challenge, a series of like seemingly menial challenges, which they try to, they compete to solve sort of as quickly or cleverly or efficiently as possible, depending on what the task sort of demands.
Yeah, and there are very little rules or parameters, and so it's really on the creativity of the comedian to figure out how to do the task.
How to best do the task. It could best be, I think it could be described as like lateral thinking the game, and that is where like the true joy of Taskmaster lies.
Yeah, so they'll walk into a room and there'll be a card there that will give them the task. And then, you know, they are filmed as they are completing the task.
And it's how they find the wiggle room in those rules that, like, much of the comedy of the show comes from. What is also very funny is that the show is staged in front of a live studio audience where these five contestants are being judged by Greg Davies, who plays the Taskmaster, and his production assistant, Alex Horn, who's the actual creator of the show, but plays this like deferent figure.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the creator of the show, and he plays just this sort of like obsequious, like,
that's incredible,
helper. And what's great is they don't know what their competitors did each challenge.
Yeah.
Like they all had to do these challenges and they don't know how their competitors approached it. And them watching each other like do these sometimes profoundly strange solutions to the puzzles is like so hysterically funny.
These puzzles are filmed offsite and then they all watch the video together.
Yes.
On stage in front of an audience.
Each episode also starts with a prize challenge where they all bring something that will be in the prize pool for that episode that the winner will walk away from. And it will be things like your most valuable possession. And in one of the challenges, like one of the prizes somebody brought in was like their wedding ring. They're like, yeah, that's my most valuable possession. I sure hope I don't lose.
Can you give an example of a task?
I have several examples of the tasks here. First episode, I think maybe even the first challenge, is the comedians walk into a room one at a time, and sitting on a table in a room like sort of surrounded in plastic wrap is a watermelon. And they open the card and it says you have 60 seconds to eat as much of this watermelon as you can, and your time starts right now. So you see this every challenge, you see a basic sort of like panic response as they like try to immediately start putting together a game plan. And without fail, each challenge there, you see a lot of different approaches to it. A few of the contestants just like immediately get the knives out and start cutting the watermelon in half. One of the contestants just picks up the half of it and starts burying their face in it and eating it. One of them actually picks up a spoon and starts like scooping it into their mouth. One of the contestants, Tim Key, who was like a superstar the first series, with the way he comes up with solutions to things, uses the corner of the table to just kind of like smash into it. another one, Ramesh Ranganathan, who was probably my favorite contestant in the first series, picks it up, hoists it over his head, and just immediately smashes it to the floor. I watched this clip of this happening today as we were prepping for this like five times. It never fails to make me laugh because of his surprise at how quickly it just shoots all over the room like a bomb has gone off. And then he realizes he has to eat it off the floor. And he like his immediate regret is so fucking funny to me. That's like an example of like how things can like how people approach things in different ways. In one of the challenges, probably one of my favorites in the first series, they have to, all the challenge says is throw a tea bag into a mug from as far away as possible. Furthest from the mug wins. You have 1 hour or something like that. And you see Ramesh just sets up a bunch of mugs in like a cluster and you're like, oh, how clever. And then he starts throwing dry tea bags at them, which like don't have a lot of great momentum or velocity. Yeah. And like almost towards the end of the challenge, he realizes like, oh, if I get these wet, they would go a lot further, which like everybody else figured out fairly quickly. One of the contestants built like a cardboard chute that they put the mug at the bottom of so that you could throw it at the chute and it would have a bigger target. Tim Key, who is the master of lateral thinking, digs a funnel into the ground and puts the mug inside of that ground dirt funnel, builds a backboard out of like a big tarp, and then cuts open a tennis ball and tucks a tea bag inside the tennis ball, and then uses a tennis ball sort of like thrower that you would use at like a dog park or something like that to launch it from like so far away and gets it in his first shot.
This is what's incredible about this show is it seems like they have unlimited resources available to them. Mm-hmm. Like I recognize it probably is limited in some way, but they come up with these ideas and these constructions that take like any number of supplies.
Yes, the Rube Goldberg machines that they sometimes build to solve these tasks are like it's like a different, it's like a strange kind of humor, those, because like it is a, and this is very British, I feel like, of just like, oh, how clever, like you get a laugh out of just like how fucking clever and smart a solution, like it is, because comedy is all about like the unexpected. And so this is a very kind of like weirdly cerebral, unexpected laugh that you get. Sometimes yeah. It's fucking funny. When Ramesh smashes the watermelon to the ground, it's hysterical. His look of regret as he realizes he's wasted all this time throwing dry tea bags is hysterically funny. But seeing somebody put together a contraption that yeah. is so smart, or see how it works. Another great example is one of the contestants. There's a challenge where all they have to do is they have a half hour to collect as many tears in a cup as possible. So a lot of people are like cutting onions or watching sad things on a computer to try and like make themselves cry, which like most people are not able to do. One of the contestants realizes it doesn't say your own tears, so he gets the entire production crew together and has them cut onions while he sings them this beautiful traditional like folk ballad, and he wins because he collects the most tears yeah. from everybody else in the cup. It is such a universally like great idea. It is such a universally yeah. funny idea. So much so that like we've watched a series and a half now, and we don't know any of the comedians that have been on it so far, but they are still like, we don't need that recognition to make us laugh. There is a series coming up with James Acaster on it that I cannot fucking wait for because he is incredibly yeah. funny. It is also universal enough that it has had a few different international versions.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
There was a version in the U.S. on Comedy Central. It ran for one season. Alex Horn was the producer of it. He played his production assistant role. This will be fun. Guess who they got as the taskmaster. Greg Davies is just this very sort of tyrant king figure on the show who like judges who wins and who has broken the rules each episode. So who do you think they got for the US?
Do I know this person?
Yeah. Not personally, but
yeah,
like,
but like, is it possible for me to guess it?
No, because I don't know that it matches that energy necessarily. I love who they cast. I do not think it was a great pick necessarily for the Taskmaster.
Joe Rogan.
Jesus God, no. Jesus God, no. I would have said John Hodgman. I think would be like fucking hysterical. Would be like perfectly matches that energy. They got Reggie Watts, who I adore, and I think is like very, very funny and talented, but like, it's not like Greg Davies is an asshole on the show. And like, yeah. I would never use that to describe Reggie Watts. So
wait, what are you saying about John Hodgman?
Well, John Hodgman can play a character who is very
That's
like,
true.
Yeah. And the vibe was just kind of wrong. Like it never quite like, I think Taskmaster has yeah. a very, very specific vibe that the US version didn't really get. So
the host has to be a little subdued. Like the host doesn't typically draw focus from the contestants. And I feel like Reggie Watts, part of what's so great about him is he has this big personality, and it would have like he'd have to be kind of restrained, I feel
There's a lot of restraint in the show that I fucking hate being the guy that's just like, yeah, the UK version of the yeah. is better. Because I don't feel that way about a lot of things, including yeah. The Office. Come at me. It ran for one season and then got canceled. And I still think there's a chance for it to like come back. It is such a brilliant idea for a show that I would love, to see a US version of it. But fortunately, there's a lot of episodes of the UK version of it. All of them are on YouTube. And you should watch it because it's fucking hysterical. It has brought a lot of joy into mine and Rachel's lives over the past couple weeks. So check it out. What's your second thing?
My second thing, now I have talked about, I believe a small wonder I had at one point was printing a digital photo so you can actually physically have it, but I have not talked about photo albums, which is something that I love.
Yeah, I bet I know what inspired this.
Well, actually, you know what was funny is that I came up with this before
Oh, wow.
before yesterday. So part of what I really loved growing up, and this might be an only child thing, but I really loved looking at photo albums before I was born.
Oh, interesting.
My parents, when they were younger, one thing that happened when my mom's parents passed was that her older sister, I believe, just went through boxes and boxes of photos and made each of their siblings like an album that had primarily pictures of them in
it. Oh, that's great.
And it's just fascinating to me. Like I there was something really interesting to me about seeing my parents when they were younger, because to me they look totally different than they do now. And it was just like a weird thing to kind of wrap my head around as a kid. And it's something that I love to do when I go home. I love seeing pictures of me as a kid, too.
Yeah.
Especially now that we have Henry, like to see the similarities at the different age
range. It's wild, yeah.
It's cool.
I feel like my version of this was home movies, which like,
yeah,
you know,
no,
I was like obsessed
true.
With our home movies
that's
growing
true.
Up.
It is something, you know, as you know, my dad is a collector of many things, but my mom and I have the common trait of just like kind of liking photos and really nothing else.
Right.
So that was one of the first things I did with Henry after he turned, or right around when he turned a year old. I like made sure to like pull all the photos off of Facebook and put it in like an album of his first year.
Yeah.
And then yesterday, totally unprompted, we have hired childcare support so that Griffin and I can continue to work. Her name is Sarah. She just kind of unprompted made this little photo scrapbook of like her summer with Henry and all these pictures I had never seen before.
So darling.
And you could tell I'd been taken over a series of days because he's wearing like different outfits. And I was just so like endeared and like charmed by it. I love photo albums. It's something that I feel like is really important to me because I feel like once you put photos like in the digital space, it's like less likely for you to look at them.
Yeah.
We did finally get one of those like digital photo frames from Griffin's dad, and it's helped a lot to like get us looking at older pictures.
I have always thought about those as being the purview of older folks because like, I don't know, I'm fine with the static images that don't move like they're in the Harry Potter castle. What's it? Hogwarts. Jesus. but yeah, having that, we have that in our kitchen. So like, we're just constantly walking by it and it is it's very nice. It actually makes me feel a little more homesick than I thought I would feel. Because like, this is by far the longest I've ever gone without seeing my family.
And it is. It's like, it's comforting in a way to see those pictures, but it is also just like, it reminds you that like, you cannot be with those people right now, which is also difficult. When I was looking into photo albums, first of all, like it just, this should not be a surprise, but like photo albums have existed since basically you could have a photo,
right?
Like since the 1850s, there's the oldest one is in the Library of Congress right now. But there is an artist who in 2013 did an exhibition called Album Beauty in France, that over 15 years of like flea markets and secondhand stores, he just like compiled all of these like photos he found.
Cool.
And turned it into an exhibit and made it kind of something you could walk through. Like the images were blown up and displayed as wallpaper. Others were in like interactive albums that you could like leaf through. There were photo life-size props that you could put your face into, and then photos printed on the carpet that you could walk over.
Jesus.
And so this artist obviously spent a lot of time just looking through other people's photo albums. And he said, this is what I found interesting. So this artist is Eric Kessels. And he said that most people make an average of 7 or 8 albums during their lifetime.
I feel like I've already done that many.
Well, yeah, that's what's interesting. He kind of noticed some themes, though. He said that the first album he would find is usually when a couple meets each other.
Oh.
And so there's a lot of photos of the couple. You know, they're like going on trips together. You know, they're like being with friends and all this stuff. And then after that is more related to the marriage. So there's like the wedding album. And then the third one is usually dedicated to either the first child or if they do not have a child, their pets.
Okay.
and then he said the 4th through 7th albums are kind of like a complete mix of like holidays, important occasions.
Boudoir, it's kind of like Everyone has a boudoir album, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And we got a few of them.
Yeah, no, Griffin is the master of the erotic pose.
And
he can be doing any kind of, you know, menial task too. Like he can make, you know, taking the garbage out erotic.
Right.
And we have a whole album dedicated to that.
Yeah. Well, I have a lot of sort of like sort of voluntary muscular control in my butt cheeks.
Yes. No, that's true.
Each individual one, right?
Any position too. He can be in repose and that butt.
I can make him clap or you'd spread them out pretty wide. What were you saying?
I wanted to talk about the eighth album of the seven or eight that most people make, which is usually when the couple is older and they are traveling together. Mm. This is like particularly like relevant to me. My grandparents, my dad's parents, traveled a lot once they retired and just have all of these albums of just like landscapes from different countries they went to, which is not particularly interesting to me. But the artist said that that is usually what happens, is that the couple is typically less interested in each other. And they tend to make more photos of the environment they're in.
Right.
Which is, yeah, like anytime anyone gets back from a vacation and they like bring all these photos of like, here's a mountain we saw. It's like, great. I want to see you. Yeah. I want to see you in a place.
Then they have their ninth album, which is their sort of elderly boudoir. one to sort of cap it off. Do you want to know what our friends at home are talking about?
Please.
Okay, well, this one is from Tasha, who says, my small wonder are fireflies. In my 32 years, this is the first time I've seen a yard full of them bopping around. I wonder where Tasha lived for that long to not see. I mean, I guess in the city.
If you're
in a city,
super urban environment, it's hard to see them.
Yeah. These are little bugs. These
I still get delighted. I don't know what it is. I guess because you don't see them as much in the non-summer months.
Right.
But every time they appear, I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, we had our first firefly sighting this week too. And like just seeing them like through the window, just like seeing one, I get so excited. Like, was that a firefly? You have to look and confirm. Okay. Shannon says, something I find wonderful this time of year is taking a moment to enjoy a powerful AC unit. I work in an order fulfillment warehouse, and it always feels so good to slowly stroll down the aisle where the big AC unit is located and just feel the breeze on my skin. Plus, it provides a much-needed relief for my masked face.
Mm.
I mean, it's very, very good. Coming in from outside into an air-conditioned room is very great. This made me nostalgic for our window AC unit. We had one like in mine and Travis's bedroom that we shared that was like...
I had one in mine too. Those old houses, like if you were on the second floor, it was impossible to keep it cool.
Yeah, so we'd have to like leave the door closed. That was like a big thing. We'd get in trouble if we left the door open with the AC on. But the smell, there's like a smell that it created that like I got very, very nostalgic for. It felt like very, very kid summer vibe to me. This took me back. Hey, thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. And you can check out all the shows on the Maximum Fun Network and enjoy them and think they're cool and subscribe to them and listen to them.
I'm going to recommend Baby Geniuses.
Okay.
Super, super funny ladies. Check it out.
Fanti. I know we hosted one of their episodes on this show. I've been listening to them every week. And it's incredibly good. You should. I'm assuming you're already listening. This is redundant. I think that's it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I wanted to thank everybody for your patience. We have been a little late on our episodes lately. It's been a little more challenging to find the time, but we are figuring it out and we are dedicated to you.
Doing
the
our best. We're the new Adventure Zone comic graphic novel book comes out in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
You should pre-order it at theadventurezonecomic.com. We just got it this morning.
It is a lovely thick book.
Yeah, it's a dense one. It's got lots of great jokes in it and cool art though. I think that's it. Thank you again and good night and good luck. Do you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Good night and good luck.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good Edward Murrow?
R. Murrow.
I don't care about his middle name.
People always use the middle initial, though. It's important.
I'm just going to call him Edward Murrow. I'm in a hurry. Good night and good luck. That's what he sounded like. He would get angry. Money won't pay. at the end of each broadcast. Good night and good luck. Money won't pay, working all day. 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 Money won't
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
I started listening to Ono, Ross, and Carrie shortly after I broke my arm, and the doctor had told me I'd never walk again.
I couldn't get my book started.
I was lost, honestly.
I knew it was time to make a change.
There's something about Ono, Ross, and Carrie that you just can't get anywhere else.
They're thought leaders, discoverers, founders.
I'd call them heroes.
Ross and Carrie don't just report on fringe science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal. They take part themselves.
They show up so you don't have to.
But you might find that you want to.
My arm is better. I can walk again.
I wrote an entire book this weekend. It's terrible, but I did it.
Just go to MaximumFun.org.
Thank you, Ross and Carrie.
Ono, Ross, and Carrie is just a podcast. It doesn't do anything. It's just sounds you listen to in your ears. All these people are made up. Goodbye.